This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is BFM 89.9. I'm Khoo Soo Chuang, joined by Wong Xiaoning. Now, here we go. In about 15 minutes, we'll be talking to Jean-Marc Rodin, the economist at the French Agricultural Research Centre for International Development, otherwise known as CIRAD, on the issue of palm oil. But before that, markets. Now, Asian markets yesterday closed in a sea of red. Hang Seng was down by about 1%. The Nikkei was down by about 0.6%. The Kospi was down by about 1.3%. And both Singapore and FBM and the KLCI were down by about 0.3%.
And over in the US, global stocks slump as trade talks between US and China appeared to near an impasse. What's new?
Yeah.
Seriously,
what
what's
else is new?
Right. With President Trump threatening to raise tariffs further, the Dow, S&P 500 and Nasdaq all closed down between 0.4% and 0.5%. Major U.S. indexes fell near session's low, and this was on the back of Reuters reporting that the first phase of the trade deal between U.S. and China may not materialize by year end. So I'm not surprised all markets are down. And if we look at the futures, Wall Street... Futures are also down. So Dow is actually down futures 95 points. S&P 500 down 9.5. And Nasdaq almost close to 50 points down. Looks like they're going to open in the red when later today.
It does look at it look like it. But obviously, the key driver of market swings this year already has been the US-China trade talks. So for more granularity on the issue and more insights, we talked to Tony Nash. He's the Chief Economist and Chief Executive of Complete Intelligence. Now, Tony, thank you for joining us. America's Senate passed legislation in support of Hong Kong protesters a couple of days ago. Obviously, that drew a rebuke from China. Do you see this development torpedoing progress made in the US-China trade talks? And how will markets hedge their bets as a result?
We don't really see the Hong Kong events torpedoing trade talks. I know there's a lot of anxiety about this, but I think China expects the U.S. to not love what's happening in Hong Kong. The U.S. will, make a statement and issue some penalties for it. But I think there's a oversimplification of the diplomatic capabilities on both the U.S. and China's side. They're both very sophisticated diplomatic corps, and they can talk about, a bunch of things at a time. So if this were happening in Taiwan, it would be very different. But it's not Taiwan. It's Hong Kong, which is, from a sovereign nation state perspective, it's part of China.
And Tony, still in Hong Kong, right? We know Alibaba raised over US $11 billion in its secondary listing. But at the same time, there seems to be no end in sight to the protests now. So how does this impact Hong Kong's position as Asia's financial hub?
We've been saying since probably July that these protests signal the end of Hong Kong as Asia's financial hub. And, when you have the events that you've had, it's very difficult to convince investors to put millions and billions of dollars in Hong Kong. For me, the kind of final nail was the judicial ruling yesterday, where the mainland took supremacy over Hong Kong courts on some issues, not necessarily around investment, but about enforcement of some of the civil laws there. So, our fear is that that imperils the imperils Hong Kong's ability to rule in its own court system, which is really the saving grace of Hong Kong as a destination for investment. So we really are not optimistic about Hong Kong's place, and we see valuations on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange declining over time.
But Tony, who do you think, which city stands to benefit from this? Who will be the new Asian financial hub?
Well, there's a lot of conventional wisdom or a lot of gossip about that. A lot of people think Singapore will be the destination. I think, of course, Singapore will absorb some, but I think Singapore is in a delicate place where they cannot be seen to be benefiting from the bad luck and the events from the mainland perspective. They need to stay in the good grace of the mainland. So if Singapore can't go out and actively market itself as an alternative to Hong Kong, I think you'll see a number of things move up to Shanghai. I think you may see some things move to Tokyo. Of course, you'll see some things move to Singapore, and you may see other things move to other financial centers in Asia. You may see other, Australian companies put things back down in Australia. I'm not really sure, but I don't see Singapore as the immediate go-to place on an active basis, and I'm not necessarily sure that there will be a single place. I think a lot of activities will offload back to, say, London and New York, because what's happening with China, it's not just Hong Kong, it's across Asia. So the risk in Asia for financial markets is not just in that one little city, it's in a number of places across the region.
Yeah, Tony, switching to China, and obviously the People's Bank of China, the PBOC, unexpectedly cut the short-term lending rates for the first time in 4 years. Also, they've also made further cuts to its 1 and 5 year loan prime rates yesterday. Does this signal more appetite from the central bank to deliver stimulus? And what are their options moving forward?
Well, the PBOC will definitely do this and more, because the domestic economic issues are pretty dire. We talked a few weeks ago where I said what I'm hearing out of China is that the electronics factories output is down 30% year on year. We're not seeing this in PMIs. We're not seeing this in official data. But eyewitness accounts are telling me that electronics output in China is down 30% year on year. It's very dire. At the same time, the CPC or CCP is looking at civil unrest in Hong Kong and other places. And so they want to placate the middle class and the working class with easy money. And so the PBOC will go to whatever lengths it needs to keep the economy afloat, keep things moving, and increase the wealth effect. So there will be some exotic instruments, there will be some basic instruments like interest rates and everything in between. But the government does not want a tight monetary policy right now, because from their view, it would only exacerbate the social issues in China at the moment.
All right, Tony, thanks ever so much for your time. That was Tony Nash, the Chief Economist and Chief Executive of Complete Intelligence. Now, Xiaoning, we've also seen some discussion on the Alibaba secondary share sale in Hong Kong, obviously done, or at least partially done, to show some kind of like political allegiance to its Hong Kong and China origins, away from its New York Stock Exchange listing. Alibaba raised about $11 billion in the Hong Kong share sale, the biggest share offering in the financial hub since 2010, and kind of goes against the grain in terms of what we say about the demise of Hong Kong as a financial centre.
Yeah, I'm just curious who actually subscribed for the shares. You know, who were the biggest buyers? Was it the actually now the Chinese asset management companies which have grown significantly in size? Or is it because it's such a big issue, even global funds can't ignore it? I mean, I'd like to see who the list of the shareholders are. But yeah, they needed this because for this year, actually, on the capital markets front in Hong Kong was very quiet. There weren't very big, many IPOs. There was only that Budweiser company that was
that's
the large
Anheuser-Busch, yeah.
Yeah, but the price, the company confirmed that it priced 500 million new shares at HK$176. This represents actually a 2.9% discount to the last close of Alibaba's American depository shares in New York. So I wonder whether they were just trying to arbitrage that 2.9%, you know. If you're a hedge fund, that's what you would do.
That's right.
So this, like you say, this Hong Kong share sale is one of the largest. And it comes at the right time because it does, you know, kind of add a little bit of excitement to an otherwise very dull Hong Kong stock market.
Bit of a shot of the arm for them. But in response to who bought those shares, I think 500 million, as you say, was put out there. But only 2.5% was actually allocated to retail investors. And that retail portion was oversubscribed by 40 times. So then they've increased that portion to 10%, which is about still only 50 million shares, which is not a lot. In terms of the share price range, I think 188 Hong Kong dollars, or yet for fat, was the not coincidental number put out there, settled at 176. As you say, 3% discount to the ADRs in New York. Again, there's a proposition there for fund managers to get some kind of like dibs into small discount though it may be, but still, albeit something.
But the other nugget is strong. The ticker is Gao Gao Fat Fat.
Right.
99.88.
Right,
I mean, they really like
no
that.
No coincidence there. So, okay. Obviously, Hong Kong, no stranger to Alibaba. I think they listed there, 12 years ago? Not the best at the time. I think, although they tripled at the debut, they plunged a lot later, took the company private. I think 5 years later, the same IPO price. So, obviously, for investors, it maybe second time lucky, yeah?
Maybe. And who knows, maybe they might take it private for the third time. You never say never in markets, right?
Yeah, that's right. Okay, Temasek is talking about bumping up their investments in America despite the trade tensions. Now, I think obviously a lot of fund managers are shying away from markets now because of the risk profile. But Temasek's not. They're still going to put money into the Americas. And that's according to Temasek's head of Americas, John Vasky.
Yeah, he said while the trade war with China was, of course, adding uncertainty across the economy, he said that the long-term thematics of Temasek's investments remain sound, adding that a substantial portion of Temasek's available funds have been allocated to U.S. deals. And in fact, in the last 3 or 4 years, they freed up money for reinvestment. 40 cents of it, plus or minus, is actually going into the U.S. So, i.e., 40%, quite a lot, actually, money.
If they freed up a dollar for reinvestment, 40 cents of that will go to America.
Yeah.
So right now, the portfolio from Temasek for America, North America, is around about 15%. And half of that is going to life sciences and agribusiness.
Yeah, I guess for them, I mean, whatever said and done, US market is the market where you want to capitalize on anything up and coming, right? If you're talking about technology and even agribusiness, that's the place to be. So, I mean, they've invested in Impossible Foods, for example, and that is the rival of Beyond Meat, which did really well in the stock market until recently. It's also in a deal to buy the 4.5 billion Singapore dollar stake in Bayer, the pharmaceutical company.
Well, I guess you can't look too much further beyond America, right? Because Europe is still a bit of a sick man. And life sciences, presumably that includes pharmaceuticals. Companies like Monsanto, obviously. I think Temasek is Bayer's second largest shareholder at 3.7% as well.
The stock price has done really badly over a flurry of lawsuits, right? But the point is, I think Temasek always says they're in there for the long term. It's not a short-term investment, so they really need to look out for sizable investments which can make a difference to their portfolio.
Okay, it's 7:17 right now. We'll be coming back with Jean-Marc Roda, the economist at CIRAD, on the palm oil issue. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.